Hey, Dr. Mike here. So you want to live forever-ish? Well, then you got to know what's in and what's not. Stay tuned to find out.
You're listening to Live Forever-ish, a show dedicated to helping you live just a little longer. Here's your hosts, Dr. Mike and Dr. Crystal Gosser.
All right, welcome to Live Forever-ish. Today, Dr. Crystal, we're going to talk about how to live forever-ish.
That's right.
Strong, healthy, vibrant, energetic.
So supporting a healthy health span.
That's your new, you like that.
That's my new thing.
I like it too. I think that's really good. So we have three things you want, one thing you don't.
Mm-hmm.
End of the day, right?
Right.
So let's get right into this.
Okay.
In number one for living forever-ish is CoQ10 because it's linked to better liver health.
Yes. Specifically liver enzymes, which we would hope translates to better liver health.
I'm excited to see this study because prior to this study, let me ask you, if somebody came up to you and said, okay, my liver is a little inflamed, my enzymes are up, what can I do to lower it? Would CoQ10 be on the top of your list?
No, it would not be. Well, it would be in my top five.
It would?
Yeah.
I don't even know if it would be in my top. I mean, you go with the classics, right? Milk Thistle, NAC, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, okay. CoQ10, let's take a look at this. It looks like this was a meta-analysis,
mm-hmm.
15 randomized controlled trials that administered CoQ10 and reported changes in liver enzymes. So what did we find here?
Yeah, so there were 712 men and women with conditions such as coronary heart disease, type 1 or type 2 diabetes, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, or just elevated lipids. And in the studies, so remember, these are meta-analysis. So some of the studies used 100 milligrams, some used different doses. So the dosing varied from about 100 to 400 milligrams per day. The duration of intervention ranged from 2 to 24 weeks. And the results were significantly reduced levels of liver enzymes. And those were specifically ALT, AST, mm-hmm. GGT.
Yeah, those are the key ones we usually look
right
at.
There's alkaline phosphatase. That liver enzyme, there was not a significant connection with that. No significant effect of CoQ10 supplementation with alkaline phosphatase.
Okay. So the CoQ10 here, I mean, your classic ubiquinone, but then there's the better ubiquinol. Do mm-hmm. we know, or was it probably a combination?
Right. It was based on the study. One study used ubiquinol. I think just one used ubiquinol. And
out of the 15 they used?
Right. And then the others, because often if you just see, sometimes you still don't know. When you're reading CoQ10 studies, usually if it says CoQ10, that's ubiquinone. If it's ubiquinol, they usually ubiquinol, the breakdown of the type of CoQ10. And so what this means is, yes, it's supporting liver health.
That's great. Yeah. And another notch in the hat? Is that how they say it? Or what is it? Flag in the something for CoQ10?
Notch in the belt. Right? You want the notch in the belt. We know CoQ10 is a powerful antioxidant, protects cells, disrupts lipid peroxidation, and helps to regenerate other antioxidants. I always like to talk about that. CoQ10 helps to regenerate vitamin E, vitamin C. These vitamins and these antioxidants work in concert.
Yeah. CoQ10 is a foundational nutrient for me.
Mm-hmm.
I've told you that before. I've told our audience that before. I take it every day. I do 200 milligrams every day. Ubiquinol.
Okay. So I do 100, but I found a stash of 200 in the pantry.
Oh,
we have boxes of supplements in the pantry, my husband takes it. He takes 200.
Are you taking 200 now?
I'm taking 200, but
I think that's a good dose. I think that's the right dose.
I think
dose.
It might be too much for me.
Why?
I don't know. Maybe I need to take it differently. So I take my CoQ10, all of my vitamins at night, my supplements at night after
maybe
I eat.
Maybe make an adjustment there.
And so I feel like it's giving me too much energy before bed.
Now, I also do think that if you, okay, in my opinion, you know, you're bumping from 100 to 200. You're increasing your blood level. That initial increase in blood level does make people feel a little energetic. Mm-hmm. Most people, though, it evens out over time, though. You know, you just keep going with it. You won't. It usually doesn't keep making you energetic.
I'm going to keep it up.
Keep it up.
My
That's
free
right.
bottle.
All right. Wonder where you got it from. All right. We are going to move on to in number two. And what is in here is slow wave sleep.
A.K.A. deep sleep.
Oh, then it just the sounds best sleep. Good, doesn't it?
I know. I know. Deep they kind of, the researchers threw me off a little bit because you don't often see it called slow wave sleep.
Yeah.
So then I went down a rabbit hole, Dr. Mike. What is slow wave sleep? And then I found the Sleep Foundation had their official definition.
Yeah.
And so this is during this period of sleep, and it's the third phase of sleep.
Right. Okay.
This is the electrical activity in the brain changes. The body's relaxing. This is your restorative sleep.
Yeah, this is restoration. I find it interesting that most adults, we're just talking about people without insomnia, right? Mm-hmm. Just, you know, normal sleeping, only spend about 10 to 20% of the time in deep sleep. Mm-hmm. The rest of the time is in REM. The rest of the time you're moving around, you're doing, you know, whatever. It's true. Yeah, we don't, you would think we would spend more time in deep sleep.
Yeah, but, you know.
It is what it is.
Nature knows best.
Is that what that is?
So lack of slow wave sleep over time can increase the risk of dementia. So as you get older, the amount of time that you spend in that zone starts to
drop.
Decline.
Even that, and that's a normal age-related thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So we know that the slow wave sleep, this is removing harmful substances from the brain, such as beta amyloid plaque. And that was kind of something that the researchers were looking into as well. There were 346 participants averaging about 69 years old. And these participants had previously participated in a cohort study, Framingham
the big study,
heart study.
Framingham heart, yeah.
And had completed two overnight sleep studies.
And so using that information, so they must have tracked then the prevalence of dementia over, it must have been several years probably,
yes.
I would guess, because Framingham is going to go on and on.
Up to 17 years.
Oh, wow. Okay, so that's pretty good. That's mm-hmm. good data.
Yep, they tracked the risk of developing dementia for up to 17 years. And so there were two main things that stood out that the researchers highlighted in their results. First, they found that aging itself was associated with a decline in slow wave sleep, as I mentioned, accelerated it from about 60 to 80.
Oh, jeez. I'm getting close.
I know. I wonder why. I didn't look into why that happens, but it happens.
I don't. And unfortunately, that's restorative sleep. And when we need to restore a lot when we're older, we don't restore as much.
No.
And then it looks like here that they, what is this? Then they determined that for each percentage decrease in slow wave sleep per year, there was a 27% increased risk of all-cause dementia. That's a very little drop in slow wave sleep, increasing risk pretty significantly. Mm-hmm.
And a 32% increased risk of Alzheimer's dementia.
Wow.
So the question is not just sleeping. How do we get restorative sleep? And we do know that if you have trouble sleeping, some of the sleep meds, they are not giving you restorative sleep.
They
You're
just
not
knock
going
you out.
Through those cycles of and the phases of sleep. So we know a couple of nutrients. I wanted to give a shout out to glycine.
Glycine, like it. Good.
3 grams. There's some research. 3 grams of glycine, that's an amino acid, can support slow wave sleep. We do know in research black cumin seed extract, standardized to about 5% thymoquinone, that antioxidant in black cumin, ashwagandha.
Our friend
both
ashwagandha.
Both of those, yes. in research, subjective studies of or reports of restorative sleep we've seen with those two nutrients.
I like so. And what's really cool about this is. This is outside of something like melatonin and some of like the lemon balm mm-hmm. and stuff people do, right? That's more just the, like lemon balms. That's calming. Ashwagandha goes like a step further, it seems here, and is able to influence the brain.
It's just working to target cortisol, which is involved with your keeping you awake.
Right, right. So it's dropping that, raising melatonin.
Remember we talked about those orexins and the ashwagandha.
Inhibits them. Remember
yes,
that?
Those,
yes.
Those wake-promoting arousal center.
I wonder if that's the if there's a connection there as we get older. Is it the orexins are a little overstimulated? You know, because as you get older, the brain does kind of get it in what we call excitotoxicity. So you wonder if some of those systems are a little up. I don't know.
Well,
just a thought, Dr. Crystal.
The researchers noted that individuals who experienced declines in slow wave sleep were more likely to have heart disease. So maybe there's some inflammation going on there. More likely to take medications that impact sleep.
Which is a big...
How about that, right?
Imagine people in their 70s taking a bunch of meds that impact sleep. Yes. Yeah, so. It happens all the time. Okay. All right. So we want glycine, black cumin, ashwagandha. We want deep, deep, slow wave sleep.
And you want fiber. I forgot to put that in. I know I got all excited.
I'm surprised you didn't say that first.
Low fiber is associated with lighter, less restorative sleep with more arousal. So get your fiber in.
Always comes back to fiber, doesn't it?
All roads lead to fiber.
All
in
right,
my
that,
world.
That was in number. I'm beginning to believe you. That was in number two. In number three, again, this is if you want to live forever, ish, strong, healthy,
vibrant,
health span, good. What do you say?
Health span.
Health
yes.
span. Right.
That's it.
Number three, then, if you want to do that, has to deal with cilantro and coriander. Now, wait a second. Let me just make sure I get this right, because
okay.
you know I watch food channels. Coriander's the seed.
Yes.
Cilantro's the plant. Right?
In the U.S.
Wait, what? In the way, wait. You just
You're
it.
Right. You're absolutely right. But in internationally, they call it, it's all the same thing.
It's just, what do they call it? Cilantro?
Coriander.
They use coriander as the, okay. Interesting.
Yep.
Because here you can go to your spice area in your grocery store and you can see you got
coriander, which are the
seeds, and then you could get
and good luck trying to cook with those. Do you ever cook with
no,
coriander?
No, I always go with well, there's my actual. Okay, this is interesting. There's a little sidebar here. I like cilantro, but I like a cousin of cilantro that's even stronger.
Ooh.
And I'm not sure if I'm going to say it right. It's
okay.
I'm not going to remember. No, it's similar to cilantro. It's cilantro or it's C-O-U.
Oh.
Robson, look that up. there's a cousin to it. It's
mm-hmm.
longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's oh, man, it's strong.
Huh.
Cilantro, I think that's right.
Well, it's a tart citrusy herb.
You're moving on.
She's moving on, Robson.
I know it most with kind of the more my... Tacos?
Yeah, you do. When I cook a lot, I like Mexican flavors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, coming from Texas, we do that. So I use cilantro, cumin, a lot of those chili powders,
mm-hmm.
a lot of soups, stews, chilies, just food in general.
But it's used often in curries, garam masala.
Mm-hmm.
We've been making that a lot.
That's good, too.
Mm-hmm. And
nice and make it hot.
And so it has a very distinct flavor. If you don't cook with it, you should. Traditionally,
some
it's
people
been
do
used
not like it
because that's what that distinct flavor can.
It's too much for
like
some
you
people.
Can taste it. It's one of those herbs you know it's
yeah,
there.
Yeah, you know it's there, and I want more.
I don't know if I want more.
I love it. Well, why are we talking about it? What's going on?
Well, it seems to have some good research. Traditionally. Disorders such as diarrhea, GI issues.
Okay.
Let's just put that. I'll just categorize everything.
IBS-D.
But
diarrhea.
modern research, modern science, now we have clinical studies. We kind of know what it's doing. IBSD, yes.
Look at that. So this was a true clinical trial in people with irritable bowel, mm-hmm. right? Because you got to remember, irritable bowel can come constipation or diarrhea, mm-hmm. or it's mostly a mix for people.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. So they but they added some other things though. Here, what did they do here? They received an herbal blend with the coriander, spearmint, lemon balm, or a placebo.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 times per day for it looks like they, everybody was receiving psyllium.
Psyllium and anti-diarrhea medication.
So everybody was receiving that, and then they added this herbal blend on some. Right, okay. Wish they would have just done the herbal blend. But you can't, you know, there's some things you can't do in trials. If a standard of care is a standard of care,
right,
you have to still follow the standard
especially
of care.
Especially if they're having diarrhea, Dr. Mike. Well, I mean, you can't not just give it, you're the placebo, deal with that diarrhea. You don't imagine they're going to get the good stuff.
Pick the people that it was, you know, was maybe moderate or something. Anyway, okay. No, but you're right. You can't do that. So there was a significant lowering of severity and frequency of pain and bloating with the herbal group.
I think that's nice. Great. I mean, the people, I like that the placebo group is almost like an active placebo.
Well, that's what they, call it.
Yeah.
They're an active control, mm-hmm. right? Because there's a standard of care.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, so that's pretty good. And then we also have some heart benefits.
Yeah, cardiovascular benefits, supporting lipids, healthy blood pressure, even some diuretic activities. I have read that with the specifically cilantro. Yeah. But I'm all confused now. Now, whenever I read studies with coriander, I don't know what they're talking about.
Well, the one you listed here, they specifically said coriander seed powder, so that one, you know, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But you're right. Like, what I would have to assume most of this is from the seed. What do you think? Flavors coming from the plant.
I think it.
Maybe?
So if you're looking at this research, I think you would have to look at where the research took place.
Yeah.
If it's a study in the U.S., but a lot of these studies are conducted in other countries.
That's really cool.
And see if they describe it.
So then they have, with the seed, there was improvements in total cholesterol, LDL, even blood pressure. That's really, really kind of cool.
BMI.
Where's that? Oh, yeah. BMI.
Significantly decreased BMI.
40
and that's
days.
2 grams of the coriander seed powder for 40 days.
Yeah. I'm not familiar with it. I don't know if 2 grams is a lot or not. I have no idea. But had good results.
Yeah.
All right. So there you go. Now, being food first, we kind of talked about a little bit. Your favorite place to put, do you use the seed more or do you use the plant more?
I use the plant. Seeds, I mean, I feel like because they're these little, they look like little pebbles.
Aren't you supposed to grind them?
Right. And I don't have a grinder. And so I have tried grinding them.
You have everything. you have little bike things at your desk.
I put them in a napkin, and then I've got like the back of the knife that I'm holding with my dish rag. It gets real dangerous. And so I just use cilantro, and I sprinkle it.
Yeah, I love it. Man, it's so good.
Really good.
Listen, audience, if you're listening, try. Just give it a shot. Even mm-hmm. if you tried it and you didn't like it, maybe it was just a little too much. Try a little bit less,
yes,
or something.
Yes.
It's really good. Okay, those are your three ends. That's what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Health span. Increase health span. But there's something. There's always an out. And today's out is added sugar.
I know. I hate to be the bearer of bad news. But the added sugar.
It's getting crazy.
It's in everything. And as you'll see, it is in things that are, you wouldn't necessarily think your whole wheat bread would have.
I know. It has added sugar.
In the form of high fructose corn syrup at that. What the researchers here are looking at, and this was published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology, they were looking at if the added sugar increased your incident of metabolic syndrome.
Right. And so they looked at both African-American and white American men and women age 8 to 18 to 30. So they're looking at a younger group.
The whole purpose was looking at a younger population.
Assuming maybe they're eating more of that sugar, right?
So yeah. Their diets were analyzed at 3 points or 3 specific times over a 20-year period. So this is another cohort. That was initially the initial purpose of that cohort study was to look at the role of a wide variety of risk factors for cardiovascular disease. Yeah. So here we are taking this group. We have this data. Let's see the individuals who consumed added sugar, sugar sweetened beverages.
That's where a lot of later on
they developed metabolic syndrome.
It's not just those like the hidden sugars too. Where we have a younger generation that is definitely drinking too many sweetened drinks. I mean, it's not just the Cokes and the Pepsis and stuff anymore.
Right. It's some of the energy drinks. Oh. It's these hydrating drinks.
It's the coffee that people get. That's the amount of sugar that goes into some of that.
Frappuccinos.
Don't just give me 2 squirts of the pumps. I want five. I mean, that's crazy.
Yikes. I know.
That's crazy. And so, lo and behold, those that had more sugar had more metabolic syndrome, right?
Right. So individuals with the greatest intake of added sugar, sugar-sweetened beverages, and added sugar-rich carb foods and beverages had a higher risk of developing metabolic syndrome than those with the lower intake. That, I mean, to me, it makes sense. But I really, the whole point here is, and what the researchers point out is, we need to be very clear when we say you need to consume carbohydrates. Like, you know, if you look at
my plate,
yes, we need more details on what those carbs are and the ones that you may need to limit. So I like cornbread, but I tell you, I don't buy the cornbread that has that's a corn cake.
Yeah, but that's good too.
I know. Your sweet breads, those Hawaiian breads.
Please stop.
They're so good. They're sweet for a reason. They have added sugar. So I think it's the people, we need to be very clear. You have to read your labels and know that it's not just the donuts and the pastries. No. Most people, when they eat those things, they recognize.
They know that sugar. It's these other things they may not. Even the coffee that somebody has at the Starbucks or what, at the Starbucks. Maybe they just don't realize how much sugar is actually in that.
It's the salad, any condiment, salad dressings. It's the
barbecue sauces, ketchup. Don't do any of that stuff.
It's your spaghetti sauce. Ooh. Am I naming everything? It's your yogurt. You're thinking, I'm going to have yogurt today.
Well, you know why there's sugar in some of those kind of, like spaghetti sauce, for example. The sugar helps to balance the acidity of the tomatoes. That's why it goes in there. But you have some people who maybe put enough just to balance, and then you have others going, like throwing in a whole cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got to be, so end of the day, we got to watch added sugars. Right? If you're going to live forever.
That's it. The added sugars, the sugary sweetened beverages, and consume more real sugar from your fruit, from your vegetables.
Yeah.
They'll give you enough.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but we got to
do it. Over time, you'll train your taste buds.
Well, it's true. So I've been low-carb keto now for over a year.
Yes.
Over a year.
I remember when you started.
There are some things I taste now. It's so sweet to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So sweet. I was going to, the other day, when I first started, I was strict keto. I'm more low carb now. So I have some cheat day and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, I got some, because one of my favorite things is chicken nuggets.
Good chicken nuggets?
Yeah, no, not like fast food. No, good chicken, like from like a, there's a couple good restaurants, right? Yeah. And a honey barbecue.
Oh.
Dip it in honey barbecue. I had some the other day. I couldn't fit.
It was too much.
Honey, I was like, I can't believe I used to like that.
Because the barbecue sauce already is sweet, and then they do the honey flavor.
But there was a time when that wasn't sweet enough for me, you know? So you're right. The whole point of that story was you can train your taste buds.
You can.
Yeah, you'll get used to another amount.
And it doesn't take long.
No. I don't think it takes long at all. Well, there you go. Three ins and an out.
Yep.
That's pretty good. These are the things you want to do if you want to live forever-ish. Let's review them real quick. Number one, what was number one?
CoQ10.
CoQ10.
For liver health.
For liver health. Number two was slow wave sleep. And number three was coriander or cilantro or colantro.
Colantro.
I'm pretty sure that's it. Pretty sure that's the name of it. And then, of course, out is the added sugar. Don't forget, you can go to liveforeverish.com where you can download, like, and share many, many, many other episodes, well over 400.
Yeah, 400. We're hitting 450. Close. 450
episodes now. But just, hey, subscribe. That way you never miss a show. We post every Monday and Wednesday, but just subscribe so you never miss a show. That's liveforeverish.com. And then our sponsor, Life Extension, wants to say thank you. If you go to lifeextension.com, buy whatever you want, you get to the cart, put in the code podcast. See, I said it better that time.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast. And you get $10 off.
10%.
10% off $50 or more plus free shipping and handling. That's podcast at lifeextension.com.
That's right.
Good show.
Yep. And you can watch
on YouTube.
Podcast on YouTube.
Yeah, we keep forgetting. We got all these cameras right there. So check that out at YouTube. I'm Dr. Mike. That's
Dr. Crystal.
Thanks for listening.